Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This year has been full of news critical to farm policy, from a presidential election to farm bill stalemate and H5N1 cases to hurricanes damaging southeastern U.S. ag production. Many ag leaders address those topics and more on AgriPulse Newsmakers in 2024. This week, we'll take a look back at what our guests had to say about critical decisions, including what you can expect moving forward. Lawmakers started 2024 reaching a short-term funding agreement to fund the government through March. Ted McKinney, president and CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, joined the show to warn that the funding problem, paired with a presidential election year, would slow down farm bill progress.
Well, anything that delays the farm bill and this floor time to get a farm bill going hurts the farm bill. And so while we absolutely must have the appropriations, I mean, nobody's going to dispute that, it's cheating ever so slowly, ever so steadily into the time that would be needed and is needed for the farm bill. You know, on the backside of that, you know, stranger things have happened, but the farm bill, if it's not started in March or so, you get into this crazy, silly season of the election and all things just go out the window in terms of logic.
McKinney, who was Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs during Trump's first term, also reflected on the tariff threats Donald Trump has made. However, McKinney says things could be different in the trade space during the next Trump administration.
There is a lot of news about the intent to go after tariffs in a big way, and I don't think that would help agriculture. I really don't. We saw that with some lost market share last time, even though I think farmers were kept whole for the interim. But at the same time, he's got a good sense, a good gut sense on this kind of thing. And I think in some way, shape, or form, I think we'll get back into the trade business.
In February, USDA chief economist Seth Meyer discussed the mixed state of the general farm economy.
I think we're in a good shape coming out of three pretty good years. And I'm talking generally speaking. I think we can find sectors of the economy where things, either particular commodities or geographies where things have been challenging. But I think we're in good shape. But I think the next year is going to be a bit more challenging as we see commodity prices fall and input prices remain pretty sticky.
Meyer also touched on the most recent ag census, including the decline in the number of farms and increase in size of the average farm. He says being competitive on a global scale will be important for U.S. farmers to stay competitive.
You know, we've had the luxury of, well, Brazil and Paraguay and Argentina have been expanding in things like soybean production, that we've had China there to pick up that demand. That's slowing. I think we want to see both more domestic uses, more diversified uses of those commodities domestically. And at the same time, we're going to have to be competitive in the export market. You know, you got to look for some of the traditional kinds of demand that you've seen in the past and then diversify. You know, there are opportunities in the world, but we're going to have to compete for them.
In March, the House Ag Committee hosted a hearing discussing the threats China poses to American agriculture. Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson joined the show to discuss why the foreign farmland discussion in the hearing was so important.
There's no doubt about it. You know, we're looking at not just the purchase of American agriculture production land, also processing, but it goes beyond that. It looks at the stealing of intellectual property, of the control of intellectual property when it comes to being able to respond to, basically agriculture needs in the future, the impacting of research, the amount of investment that, China legitimately is doing in research. And this is why we need to increase what we're doing in research with as a part of the Farm Bill.
The House Ag Committee passed a Farm Bill out of the committee in May. We'll be back with reaction to that and more right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who helped build the America we depend on. And Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you yes. asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. In March, USDA announced the first avian flu case in dairy cattle. By April, the Agriculture Department issued an order mandating the testing of lactating dairy cattle moving from one state to another. Jenny Lester Moffitt, USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, explained the department's response.
At this point now, we have 33 herds across 8 states that have tested positive for highly pathogenic avian influenza, the same genomic sequencing. A lot of this, what we understand is the transmissibility between cattle. We understand that because of cattle movements from herds in the Texas Panhandle region to other areas of the country have caused the spread of this virus into those other states as well. This is an evolving situation. This is our first detection that we have had of the bird flu of highly pathogenic avian influenza in dairy cattle. So we're 4 weeks into this. We're learning more as we go, but we've so far gathered about 2,000 tests of dairy cattle and have a better understanding, but we have more to learn. We've been able to, through our testing, understand the linkage of spreading the disease through the movement of cattle. So the announcement that we had this week, the federal order that has two main primary components to it. First is the mandatory testing of cattle, of dairy cattle, before movement across state lines. And then the second is mandatory reporting of positive test results by any lab for livestock that have highly pathogenic avian influenza. Those two things together will give us and paint a better picture for us to be able to understand what's happening, gathering that data, gathering that understanding, but also limiting the spread through really important things like pre-movement testing so that we know and there's a negative confirmation of dairy cattle before they move to other states. Again, that will limit the spread and reduce the spread of the virus throughout the dairy herds across the nation.
In May, the Farm Bill was marked up in the House Agriculture Committee and approved with the help of 4 Democratic votes. We asked former House Ag Committee Chair, Congressman Frank Lucas from Oklahoma, about the bill and how it differs from previous updates.
Well, first off, the 2024 Farm Bill is refining and improving the 18 Farm Bill. And the 18 Farm Bill was refining and improving the 14 Farm Bill. The challenge of the 2014 Farm Bill was we had to rewrite policy. The old supply management stuff from 1933 to 1996, and the direct payment program, as Pat Roberts used to call it, the Freedom to Farm Bill from 1996 to 2014. So we had to reinvent the wheel. This time we don't have to reinvent the wheel, but the key I would say as chairman or member is lots of patience, lots of focus, and a willingness to commit and understand that we have to have a safety net both for production and consumption. That's what a farm bill is all about. And we got there this week. It was a little louder maybe than normal, but still, in the rancorous Congress I've served in, pretty good process.
Lucas said that in farm bill negotiations, lawmakers have historically been in one of two camps. The trend continues with this bill.
Republicans, who represent the lion's share, maybe 90+, maybe 95% of production agriculture rural America, are very focused on the commodity side. Price protection, crop insurance, rural development, ag research, all those programs that help us raise the products. The lion's share, not all, but the lion's share of Democrats who serve on the committee are very focused on the SNAP program, the consumption side of the equation, food stamps, as we traditionally used to call the stuff. So you've got these two different perspectives. Where should we spend our money? What should the focus be? But ultimately, like last week, you have to come down to an understanding that both pieces have to fit together. I do lots of in-person town hall meetings in my district, and I remind folks, it doesn't matter how many dollars are on that electronic benefit card to help SNAP people who need those resources to get the calories they have to have. If there's nothing on the shelf to buy, it's for naught. So you've got to raise the food and fiber before anybody can consume it.
In June, we talked to House Ag Chair G.T. Thompson about the farm bill that came out of his committee.
Across the board, all 12 titles, starting with Title One, you know, where we really provide the type of investment in terms of commodities to deal with market volatility. There hasn't been an increase in that area for a long time, and that also included giving an opportunity for farmers that don't have base acres to have base acres. That's a huge improvement. But it's all across the title. The conservation investments that we did, honoring that the best type of conservation is locally led, voluntary, incentive-based. What we did in terms of rural broadband, of expansion, not just increasing an investment in that area, but making sure that we did it in the right way.
This summer, we traveled to both the Republican and Democratic National Conventions. We'll feature our coverage from those events after the break.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. In July, we traveled to Milwaukee to cover the Republican National Convention, where Donald Trump accepted the party's nomination and named Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate. We spoke with Kellyanne Conway ahead of the convention to discuss the GOP shift in rural voters, a foreshadowing to the results we later saw in the general election.
I think that demographers and geographic experts do the same by slicing and dicing up America thusly. But when you look at rural America, it really is very much in the Republican column now. That was not always the case. And over time, the rural voter has been migrating more to the America First agenda of secure borders and growth in the economy that provides prosperity and opportunity. They probably know that President Trump in his first term strengthened America's rural economy by investing over about $1.3 billion through the Agriculture Department's ReConnect program into bringing broadband and infrastructure to rural America. Obviously, President Trump is overtly, visibly, and vocally a, quote, friend to farmers, believes that agriculture is a backbone of the United States economy, but the United States identity also. Just we were built on being an agrarian society.
We also spoke with GOP leaders of both the House and Senate Ag Committees, Congressman G.T. Thompson and Senator John Bozeman, about what a second Trump administration could mean for agriculture.
Well, I think the administration is going to do a great job for farmers, a great job for rural America. The Biden administration has done a very, very poor job with trade. You look at the last 2 years, we've been running these huge trade imbalances in agriculture for the first time since anybody can remember. We always have a big ag surplus, predicted to have an even bigger one in the future. So, no. And then also, President Biden actually kept the tariffs in place. What I want from President Trump, and I think he'll be very willing, is to make sure that whatever deals that we have or create are fair, that we don't have dumping, both sides play by the rules, and tariffs are used as an enforcement tool for that.
Congress was in recess during August, but campaigning did not slow down. Joe Biden ended his reelection campaign in July and endorsed Kamala Harris for the presidency. Harris then named Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate. We traveled to the Minnesota Farm Fest to learn about Walz from those who have worked with him in the agriculture policy space, including incoming Senate Ag Committee ranking member Amy Klobuchar.
He is from the Midwest and served on the House Ag Committee, and people don't have to agree with him on anything, but having someone on there matters. It matters for me as a leader on the Ag Committee to have someone that actually served on the House Committee, got a bill through with Colin Peterson, knows about Midwestern ag issues, knows about biofuels, knows about hogs. That's going to help. He represented a district that was, you know, nearly all rural. That makes a difference in that job, because otherwise you don't know who to call and who you're talking to.
Later in the month, we traveled to the Democratic National Convention to cover Harris's policy positions that could impact agriculture. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack joined us in Chicago to share his perspective.
Well, it's a combination. Vice President Harris comes from California, which, as you know, is a fairly significant agricultural state. So obviously that's front of mind for her. Tim Walz, because of his service in Congress and as governor of a state that is heavily dependent on agriculture, obviously in rural places, obviously will be a great champion. So it's a combination of the partnership and the chemistry between these folks. There's obvious chemistry. There's obvious connection between these folks, which I think is really, really important. I know that Vice President Harris is a collaborator. She's somebody that wants guidance from a variety of different points of view before she makes decisions. So I think that's a smart way to decide. And the fact that Tim Walz is in the room and maybe the last person in the room as that decision is being made guarantees that rural interests will always be in that room, always be part of the discussion. And I think that's just extraordinarily exciting, especially coming from a Democratic administration.
Congress was back in Washington for the month of September. Although months away, renewing the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act will be a major priority in 2025. We asked Congressman Jason Smith what's at stake for farmers and rural America when several provisions in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expire next year.
You know, we're looking at the entire tax code. I've set up 10 tax teams. They have had over 90 site visits, meetings with stakeholders. They have visited 17 different states to hear from real farmers, real small business owners, real American workers, instead of just what's in the bubble of Washington, D.C., to look at what tax policy works the best for real America. And that's what we're going to be looking at. Like you said, there are $4.6 trillion worth of tax expirations. We're going to see the death tax slashed in half. We're going to see every individual tax bracket increase. We're going to see the guaranteed deduction, which 91% of Americans used to file their taxes, be slashed in half. And then we're going to see the small business deduction, which is a 20% deduction for all partnerships, LLCs, pass-throughs, subchapter S's, which the majority of farmers are. That's going to disappear if Congress does not act.
Donald Trump was elected president during the November election. We'll have reaction to the election results from two former secretaries of agriculture after the break.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Welcome back. Category 4, Hurricane Helene crashed into the Florida Panhandle and through Georgia, the Carolinas, and eastern Tennessee, flattening crops, destroying infrastructure, and taking more than 130 lives in the storm's destructive path. Congressman Austin Scott described the damage to his district in Georgia.
So there's tremendous damage. If you go into Coffee County or Douglas, you've got about 160 chicken houses that are totally wiped out. That feed an integrator that is the largest employer in the county. it'll take a long time for those houses to get rebuilt and places for the chickens to grow out and again to supply that integrator there. You've got tremendous amount of cotton damage when you go to the east. You've got tremendous amount of timber, pecan orchards. We think that, you know, we've lost somewhere close to 50,000 pecan trees, I think is the last number that I saw. And it is, it's just astronomical, the damage. And some of it, a lot of it, especially from the standpoint of timber in the orchards, is generational.
After months of campaigning, the election finally took place in November, with rural voters carrying Donald Trump to victory for the presidency. A Republican trifecta was achieved as the party won control of both the House and Senate as well. We sat down with former Ag Secretary Dan Glickman to discuss the role rural voters had in the election.
I was a member of Congress in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, and I was on the Ag Committee, and then I became Secretary of Agriculture, and I always had good relationships with rural and small town voters. I got good margins in my own elections with rural and small town voters because I really did my best to work with them and try to help them the best as I can. And now you look at vast areas of rural America, there are just no Democratic representatives in Congress, or very few. And I think a lot of it doesn't have to do with ag programs. It has to, I think, to do with cultural issues. It has to do with perhaps guns, other cultural issues, maybe abortion. A lot of the folks in rural America think that the Democratic Party is too elitist, too coastal. This election showed that this is powerful vote for Republicans in rural America is something that Democrats just still haven't come to grips with how to deal with.
Mike Johanns, another former ag secretary, provided insight on what farmers can expect from a second Trump administration.
There's just no question about it. He does extremely well in the rural areas of the entire United States. So small towns, farms, ranches are close to his heart. So I think he'll remember that. I think that's just the nature of getting yourself elected to any office, much less the presidency. So I think he's going to try to do everything he can to be helpful to America's rural areas, to America's farmers and ranchers.
A generally unproductive 118th Congress is concluding without passing a new farm bill. We asked Senate Ag Committee Ranking Member John Bozeman about his message to farmers who wanted to have a farm bill passed before the end of the year.
Well, I know they're concerned, and it's been just kind of the perfect storm. We've got with the 2018 farm bill, it was a great farm bill for 2018. The data that it really came from was 2012 data. The world is totally different now than it was then. The pandemic and inflation changed everything. And so we've got to reset and get a farm bill that works for farmers. So I know they've been frustrated, and I've been traveling all over the country, visiting with them, getting input. The good news is all the work that we've done, it doesn't go away. You know, it's still current. It's still, you know, it's still stuff that we need to use to write a new farm bill. But my message has been, look, this is a five-year commitment. We don't change farm bills. You know, this is a commitment to our farmers for 5 years. They're certainly there. But rather than just doing something, we have to do the right thing. You know, we have to get it right.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers right after this.
Elevate your game and set your sights on Denver for the 2025 Commodity Classic. With technology that moves faster than fluctuating markets and information as important as $1 million rain, Commodity Classic is designed for growers of all kinds, where you'll broaden your horizons as you improve yield and ROI one bushel at a time. Take your operation to new heights and join us for Elevating Excellence in Agriculture, March 2nd through 4th in Denver. Learn more at commodityclassic.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. This has been an interesting year in farm policy, to say the least, and we want to thank you for joining us not only for this look back, but for being along for the ride all year long. Looking forward, 2025 is certain to have many critical moments of its own, and we're looking forward to providing you with balanced reporting and trusted insights in the new year. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.